We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Mail, read by Cathy Clugston.
Free Inside, How to Beat Hair Loss, the Definitive Pull-Out Guide.
And our thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Hugo Rifkin and Mark Steele. And opposite on my left, Holly Walsh and Jeremy Hardy. Hugo, who wants docs around the clock?
The government. The government has this plan that they want basically the NHS to be the same every day of the week. And what they don't realise, perhaps, is the NHS already is the same every day of the week. If you want to go and see a doctor on a Sunday, then you can't find one and you have to go to A&E with all the people getting railings pulled out their heads and stuff. And if you want to see a doctor any other day, you normally can't find one and have to go to A&E with all the people getting railings pulled out of their head. But not realising this, they're trying to sort of make it systematic across the week. They want to make it easier for people to get appointments with their GPs at weekends, which seems fairly sensible. And they want to recruit another 5,000 GPs to do this, which also seems sensible, depending on who those 5,000 people are. You know, if it's Joey Essex doing a TV show, that would be terrible and perhaps fatal. But no, they want to do this. But it's problematic because various people think it'll cost too much. GPs think there won't be enough GPs. Nurses say it'll cost too much and they'll end up cutting the pay they get at weekends to work weekends already. And so they're threatening to go on strike and then everyone won't get railings pulled out of their heads at all. But it is worth doing because at the moment you're much, much, much more likely to die on a Sunday. They're much higher.
Apparently patient mortality rates on a Sunday are 16% higher than on a weekday. And I have a theory about that. I think it's because they've just sat through Downton Abbey and lost the will to live.
Yeah, but by overstretching the resources, all they're doing is they're going to make it 16% more likely to die on a Tuesday.
But that's equality, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is equality.
Did you know in Denmark we have more doctors per person than in the UK, but we also have more complex and more gripping murders, which I think is a sort of swings around.
But people like paying tax. They're all right with that, aren't they, in Denmark? You go, all right, yeah, we pay a bit more, and then we have decent hospitals and stuff. They're all right with it.
Yeah, it's really not. I remember my dad was a journalist, and we were living in New York, and he wanted to interview a social worker. He couldn't think how to find one. And I said to him, how would you find one in Denmark? He said, I would stop every other person in the street.
They should outsource the patients. That would be the thing. If they could get private companies to supply healthier patients, take a massive burden off the NHS.
But aren't we not going to be getting doctor's advice via Skype? Is that not the thing? That was one of the suggestions. And this really worries me because my Wi-Fi connection, it buffers. And I think the doctor's going to think I'm having a series of mini strokes.
Also, if you've got a very personal illness, you're basically going to be reenacting Babe Station online. Nobody wants to do a breast examination while a man is sitting on an internet at the other end of it. I
mean, you can ring up those women and say, I've got a rash on my left buttock. It's not itchy, but it's suppurating slightly. Do you think I should treat it with a local antibiotic cream or should I go straight to A&E? You can do that.
When asked about the funding, the Prime Minister said we should not just automatically assume seven-day services would cost more. And I think that's true. We should also use maths and logic. £8 billion, is it right? £8 billion is needed?
Yeah, and also 5,000 GPs. I mean, it's a lot of doctors. It's this idea that there's lots of doctors going spare that are just hanging around not being doctors.
Like Liam Fox. Yeah.
Get all those ones who call themselves doctor who just got a PhD. And press them into service. All right, you call yourself Dr. Big Boy. Let's see what you can do.
Dr. Big Boy is a very different TV channel.
I've got loads of doctorates. It's great. You get to a certain age, you don't have to do any work at all. They just give them to you.
Well, seeing as you're here, Jeremy's got this rash.
David Cameron has renewed his vow to boost NHS funding and create a seven-day health service amongst questions over how this will be funded. A seven-day health service sounds impressive, but the Prime Minister hasn't confirmed which 7 days they'll be. The NHS commitment marked Cameron's first official speech since re-election. His first unofficial speech was talking to a decorator about turning Nick Clegg's old office into a games room. In response, Dr. Napol, the chairman of the BMA's GP committee, said the target was impossible as thousands of GPs were leaving the service due to high stress levels. If only there was someone they could see about that. There we are. 2 points to Hugo. Jeremy, which champion of the workers wants to take away some workers' wages?
Well, this is David Cameron, who was rather embarrassed at the immigration figures, which were supposed to be in the tens of thousands. He said to us that if he couldn't reduce immigration to tens of thousands rather than 100,000, we should vote him out of power. And some of us thought, don't worry, Dave, we're going to try and do that anyway, regardless of what happens with immigration. That's not a criterion. But he obviously didn't mean it. It's like when someone says, let's not get each other anything for Christmas. And or don't bother with my funeral, just leave me out for the bin man. People don't mean those things. So these figures were being published on Thursday, which said that net immigration is still massively higher than he said it was going to be. So he decided to call a press conference and announce that he was going to confiscate the wages of people working illegally. And there are about 250,000 people in this country working below minimum wage, which is illegal. So surely their wages should be confiscated, even if they're not foreign. In fact, surely, there's a loophole in the law which enables people to be not only poor, but foreign. And if we... if we just jailed those people and confiscated what filthy water they do have, it would solve a number of problems for us. And he wants to have an immigration cap on skilled workers from outside the EU, which is basically all of the doctors and nurses who will be required to staff the NHS 7 days a week.
But Labour welcomed the action, and the action said it didn't go far enough. And it seems ridiculous of Labour to oppose immigration when there are clearly no Britons skilled enough to lead them, so...
yeah, exactly. Oh, they're pathetic, aren't they? There was a guy called Keir Starmer, right? And I'd heard lots of people saying, oh, yeah, we're trying to get him to stand to be Labour leader, because he's going to be really good. He was something or other, director of something.
DPP.
DPP, that's right.
Right, and I thought, oh, right, people must think he's quite good, he's a bit better. And I saw him on Newsnight, Evan Davis, he was saying, right, so what do you think that Labour should be all about then? And he said, well, I think that Labour should be about values. So Evan Davis said, well, what sort of values? He said, well, I think the important thing is that Labour has values. And I thought, oh, that's it. That's why Ed Miliband lost. He had no values. He was just a sociopath and went round, like, burning rabbits and things like that. Values. And he said, well, I think the values of aspiration, because we need to speak to people and say to them, we want you to have a job and a house. Is that it? Is that the good one? This idiot is the good one. We want you to have a job and a house. That's why they lost. Was Ed Miliband going around saying, no, 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 we're going to demolish your houses brick by brick and spray plutonium all over the rubble, and we're not going to rest until every single one of you lives in a wheelie bin. Is that what they were saying? You idiot. Is that the best that you could do? The whole of the Labour Party, this great steaming cretinous pile of shit.
You've been affected by any of the issues.
I'm sorry. That's 2 weeks that's been brewing.
Cameron said all kinds of things about immigrants, including if anybody is working illegally, which basically means you're not allowed to. I mean, it's not a crime, is it? Just the fact that something is against the law. If you come here as a refugee and you haven't got enough documents to prove that you were sufficiently tortured to satisfy a civil servant in Croydon, your asylum claim will be turned down and you either leave and go back to the place you fled from, or you just go on the run and you work illegally. I mean, I used to, at one point in my life, I became very lazy and had a cleaner. And, of course, she was an illegal immigrant. Of course she was. How can you justify being lazy enough to have a cleaner unless you're helping somebody without documentation stay in the country illegally? And she was lovely, and she explained to me that she'd been part of the political wing of a paramilitary organisation in Peru, and therefore it was a bit tricky for her to go back to Peru.
It's like the most Jeremy Hardy cleaner in the world, isn't it?
And she knew Paddington as well. She knew Paddington quite well. He was on the military wing, actually. She didn't really have any truck with him because he was, you know, he was apparently a bit crazy. You know, and there was never going to be a peace process with Paddington because he was just... In the end, they let her stay, and now she's legal. But I mean, you know, I mean, Peru, she was quite illegal. But here, she was just cleaning people's houses.
That's almost the attitude toward immigration in this country, isn't it? Is I'll tell you what happens, right, is they flee from Somalia or somewhere like that where they've all got Ebola, right, or their village is on fire, and then they walk across Africa, right, and then they climb in a barrel, float to Spain, travel across Europe on the back of a truck in a crate full of piglets, cling to the side of an hovercraft, come over here, then we're supposed to look after these people who aren't prepared to make an effort.
In a speech this week, David Cameron announced a crackdown on immigration, promising to confiscate the wages of illegal workers. A mere 5 years after he promised to bring net migration down to the tens of thousands, it's actually gone up by 50,000. The rise in net migration is the same as the population of Coventry, and we asked for a statement from Coventry, but they just ignored us. Last year, net migration rose by 50%, and now Britain is struggling to accommodate another 300,000 nets. Mark, whose employers have gone nuclear?
Right, I would guess this is, I can't remember his name, but there's a lad who was working on a submarine, Trident submarine, and he wrote a report.
He's called William McNeely.
Okay.
He's an able seaman.
Well, able seaman William McNeely has produced a report, so 18 pages or something like that, some huge, great report, in which he is detailed in this report all manner of things about Trident. And marvellously, the two that I sort of picked up on, one, he said that it is basically unsafe and the missiles are dangerous, not just to when they're fired, but they could go off any moment. But then also he's complaining about the food hygiene within the submarine. So that's quite a list of complaints, isn't it?
It
could blow up the whole of Britain, and not only that, but this tuna is past its sell-by date. So he's got a number of complaints.
Well, I like the fact that he said a terrorist attack could take place. All it takes is someone to bring a bomb on board. And I thought, well, if there isn't already a bomb on board, then we seriously have been wasting our money.
I actually saw a documentary about a very similar story. It was sort of from the 90s, and it was about this nuclear warship, and some terrorists got on board disguised as a band. And luckily there was this chef who looked just like Steven Seagal. And with the help of this stripper who, by the way, nobody searched the cake when that came in, they managed to save it. And I think it was, the documentary was called Under Siege, but it's a terrible, I mean, it's been going on for years.
Polly, say this, nuke, say that.
Nuke.
Lee.
Lee.
Put those three together.
Nuclear.
No. Why do people think it's all right to do that with that one word? And not
What is it?
Nuclear.
Oh, right, what did I say?
Nuclear. Because you've learnt it from George Bush. It's nuclear.
Oh, you'd have been brilliant at the sort of strategic arms talks.
That's why we've never had a comprehensive multilateral disarmament programme, because nobody can agree on how to say the words. There's probably a whole parallel system of nuclear weapons which just land on cities and make everyone start speaking wrongly.
No, I think they just pick out the pedants.
Understand there was a fire in a missile compartment after rolls of toilet paper caught fire. Now, anybody?
Well, he also said that one of the missile compartments they used as a gym.
Yeah.
And there was a danger of people dropping weights on the warhead. I mean, it's terrifying.
Yeah, nobody should be working on their guns in that situation.
But what, isn't there a far greater point, which is that we shouldn't have the thing anyway, because it's ridiculous. It's really, really expensive. I mean, it's not cheap, Trident. We could get rid of it. Because what, are we realistically going to fire it at Vladimir Putin? He'd catch one of them in his teeth and bite its head off.
No, I liked it when he said, this is bigger than me, this is bigger than all of us. I thought, welcome to my world. No, you're right about the thing, Hugo, though. He said that security passes and bags go unchecked. And if there's one place you don't want to operate an open-door policy, it's a submarine, I would have thought it would be...
Do you know, Britain doesn't have a very illustrious history with submarines. Because I remember learning at school about the K-boats, which were our answer to the German U-boats. And we managed to sink five of them once in 75 minutes because a boat crashed into one and another one turned around and crashed into another two.
Did you say the K-boats were after the U-boats?
Yeah.
Surely the V-boats were after the U-boats.
No, the U-boats were the German ones.
Yeah.
Wait, so who are the K-boats? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, that's right. My dad left school at 15 and was given the job of trying to sink U-boats. That was how badly we were fighting the Second World War. My dad was 15 and was given the job of being the person trying to invent the way of sinking U-boats, which is why we had to get Benedict Cumberbatch to invent the calculator.
Aren't U-boats sunk already? Isn't that the point?
No, I mean, sunk, but making them...
Not
come up again.
Maybe that's they didn't give him sufficient instructions. They said, we want you to sink the U-boats, and he's thinking, they're down there already, I'm not going to bother. So did he manage to
do
it?
No, of course not.
Nothing.
No.
What was he given to do this job?
Just lots of explosives and stuff, and sent to Staines Reservoir. Well, they didn't have computers in those days, so they just used to go and pretend in ponds.
Able seaman William McNeely has handed himself into the police after publishing a dossier online criticising the safety of Britain's nuclear submarines. The Nuclear Submariner wrote a report detailing serious security and safety breaches. Apparently, the key to launch the missiles is kept on a string behind the letterbox, and the password is password. Able seaman McNeely is a nuclear weapons engineer, which basically means he comes round and says, "Have you tried switching it off and back on again?" 2 points to Mark. Holly, who's telling Whitehall to snip, snip, chop, chop?
Oh, this is George Osborne, isn't it? It's so hard to get really fascinated by hardcore economics, because this is effectively what this is. This is a... Osborne's told Whitehall that they need to make £13 billion worth of cuts. And I love the way the papers keep going on about how Osborne is wielding his axe. They make him sound like he's a sort of pole dark, sort of topless and sexy. But in reality, it's just a man hunched over a computer pressing delete on a spreadsheet, also topless. But
clearly what's happened is they've gone to the banks and said, "Look, you know all that money we gave you when you screwed up? Have you still got it? Because I hope you haven't paid it all to yourselves in huge salaries and bonuses, because we kind of need it back because of the deficit." And they said, "Oh, do you know what? No, we haven't got it. Do you know who's got it? The poor have got it. I don't know how it happened, but a load of old people in wheelchairs came in one day and then they just took all the money away. You'll have to ask them." So he's going round to get it off of them.
Well, this is... When you sort of think, if you're a teenager now, it wouldn't be like in the 60s, you think, "Oh, well, I'll be all right. There'll be school and then a council house and then a pension." But all that's gone now, and they go, "Pensions, no, you haven't got any of that." Then you get these people on Moneybox or something like that, and they'll say, "We just have to get used to the fact that we've just got to put a bit more extra money aside every month to make sure we've got enough for our pension." And I always think, what extra money are you talking about? You think people are sat at home going, "Oh, at last, that nice man's told me where to put all that extra money. I've been wondering what I'd do with it. I can't get round the house for all money. I've been going out to the zoo and feeding it to tigers. What? And then they'll have a phone in and someone will ring up and say, "Well, I can't really afford anything extra." And they'll say, "Oh, well, I mean, we could all make sacrifices. Maybe you've got children. Why not abandon them to the forest? They can be raised by foxes and you'll have another £50 for your ISA account." Even at 18, you really should be putting money aside for your petrol. I always think, what kind of a miserable, useless, poxy, moron, filthy, disgusting excuse of an 18-year-old even thinks about putting money aside for a pension? You don't deserve to live half long enough to get anywhere near a pension.
Do you know what, Mark? If you presented Moneybox Live, I'd listen.
Who listens to that?
Just, I have no
the
idea.
Grasping
who
Daily Mail reading Tim Henman fans, aren't they? And listen to Moneybox. Because actually, don't we just owe the money to ourselves?
Yeah, it's our
basically
money.
The deficit is all money that we basically owe to ourselves. So it's all those people who've got savings, government bonds and all that stuff. You just say, "No, you can't have that anymore."
But what's happening? We've got this new thing, UK government investments, and it's part of a scheme to raise money by selling off more publicly owned assets. I would have thought there's nothing left. I'm pretty sure Gravity is now owned by Serco. I'm pretty sure there's
I love that phrase, public assets.
Yeah.
I want to know what's the difference, like, what is really the difference between a public asset and a national treasure? Because they seem pretty similar to me. I mean, you know, I think we should just sell off Stephen Fry to the Americans. I think we should do what we did with London Bridge. We should make them think, the Americans, we should make them think that they're buying Stephen Fry, but actually we're selling them Giles Brandreth.
While we're talking Tory, who thinks Ed made a monumental error? There's a gentleman who's a Tory who thinks that Ed made a terrible mistake.
Well, all of them,
it's
surely.
The man who actually carved the manifesto plinth. His name is Steve Van Hinsberg, and he voted Tory. apparently, Ed had planned to put the tablet in the Rose Garden, where in 2010, David Cameron also unveiled an inanimate slab that stood there doing nothing for 5 years. Nick, as he likes to be called. George Osborne has told Whitehall this week to immediately start finding £13 billion worth of cuts as part of his plan to reduce the national deficit. The Chancellor expressed a need to announce spending cuts from every department besides health, schools and foreign aid come the July budget. At least, we think that's what he said. It was hard to hear through his new government-issue yoghurt pot telephone. At the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Mark have got 4 points, but so too have Holly and Jeremy. We start round two with a TV listing for More 4.
10 p.m. Sex Party Secrets. 11 p.m. 24 hours in A&E.
And our thanks to Jonathan Mock for sending us that. Hugo, who've got hold of some diamond geezers?
So this is the Hatton Garden heist. Love the word heist. Where they drilled into a vault and they crawled through this tiny, tiny hole and got out all these diamonds. And they've the police have arrested some people for it. And they're surprisingly old. Because everyone was expecting, because they did this sort of, like, clever abseiling and crawling and all this kind of stuff, that these would be sort of young, athletic, you know, sort of slender people. But in fact, they were all between the ages of, I think, the late 40s and 76. And I was sort of wondering, Sandy, if you knew anybody between the age of sort of 40s and 70s who could perhaps fit in a tiny space at all. You can come back to me on that. But it is really surprising that, I mean, we of course don't know, they're just suspects, you know, they may not have done it.
But it was a wonderful gang, wasn't it? I kept expecting a little old lady that they were lodging with to issue statements saying what fine young men they were and what a lovely string quartet it was.
When they were in court, they had to have two questions repeated because two of the suspects were hard of hearing. My absolute favourite thing about this whole case was it was a report in the BBC, and they'd interviewed some of the people who'd, you know, lost quite a lot of money, lost valuables that were held in the vault. And one of them was a man called Norman Bean, and they were interviewing him about how terrible it was that this had happened and this extraordinary thing that had happened. And there was this quote in the BBC report where it said, "It's like something out of a film," said Mr. Bean. You've done that on purpose.
But it's a sort of sad, isn't it, when we're a bit pleased to see a good old-fashioned vault raid?
We were trying to work out the difference between what is a robbery and what is a heist. And I think a robbery is where you feel sorry for the victim, and a heist is where you really want them to get away with it.
But it is so much easier to bank rob online. So you do appreciate when somebody makes that extra effort, don't you? I love the idea of them with £2 million worth of jewels escaping in a tin bath down a hill.
I just love how... I think it's a really good quality crime. That's what I like about this. It's a top quality crime. You rarely get it. I had an amazing situation once. I was at a really posh restaurant. This couple sat down next to us and they started ordering champagne and they were having the best night. They were ordering literally every single thing you can imagine on the menu that was expensive. And at the end of the night, the waiter came over and was like, "Here's your bill," to the woman. And she went, "Oh, thank you so much for this, but we won't be paying." And the waiter was like a bit taken aback. He was like, "Sorry." And the man went, "Yeah, we've just been charged with fraud. And we've got to go to court in the morning. And our solicitor says we're going to prison for a very long time. So we thought we'd just have one last blowout before we went." And the thing is, you can't be great. You just take your hat off to them. You're like, that is a brilliant crime. Congratulations.
What happened?
They just got taken out by police. I mean, not like shot. That would be bad.
Detectives from the Flying Squad have arrested 9 men this week in connection with the Hatton Garden jewel heist that took place earlier this year. It was too early to say whether victims of the jewellery heist would get their belongings back, claimed a police spokesman sporting a particularly fetching tiara. Police have said that the thieves disabled a communal lift and then climbed down the shaft into the basement because you shouldn't use the lift when an alarm's going off. Commander Peter Spindler said the police had behaved in the finest traditions of the Flying Squad, traditions that include diligence, teamwork and saying, "Shut it, you slag." 2 points to Hugo. Jeremy, who's being vigilant after getting into a beef with police?
There's a vigil for this cow who was shot by the police, basically, in Wall's End, in north of Newcastle. There's a field. There's quite a lot of fields close to the centre of Newcastle with cows in them. And this cow wandered onto the road, which in India would not be seen as a big deal because cows just wander all over the place. But the police thought, we didn't often get to shoot anything in Newcastle. And so they thought, well, imagine that this is an Al-Qaeda cow that's got hidden explosives in its udders and it's going to blow up the whole of Newcastle. And they shot it in the interest of public safety, and they can't really explain why that they felt it necessary. So there's a candlelit vigil to remember this cow.
With people dressed in cow onesies, which I like very much. The photographer who was there, John Millard, said there was a massive police presence, more than 15 vehicles, a helicopter, 3 or 4 officers in sniper gear, 1 in an apron holding a bowl of horseradish. I have no idea, but...
They didn't suspect it of anything?
No.
They just said it lunged towards us like a cow possessed with the strength of 10 cows. It was coming straight at us. We had no choice.
Well, seeing as Newcastle's quite near Scotland, might they not have thought it was a military coup?
There were 3 cows. 2 others were safely...
Two others?
Safely taken in for a grilling. I don't know what happened to them.
Didn't they chase it with a helicopter first?
Well, they were going to use a helicopter to remove the cow, but I think they decided the stakes would be too high. I could be here all night with this stuff, people. Almost 400 people pledged to attend a vigil being held for a cow shot dead by armed police near Newcastle. The cow, known as Bessie, was among three to bolt from a country park after being spooked by a dog. When asked to comment, the dog said, "Sausages." Bessie was shot in Wall's End, famed as the birthplace of Sting, as if the poor thing hadn't suffered enough. Wall's End derives its name as the location of the end of Hadrian's Wall. Hadrian would have made the wall longer, but he sat down for a tea break and was immediately shot by police. The vigil took place at 6 p.m. on Friday. Those attending were asked to bring a candle and wear a cow onesie. I can't believe they pinched my funeral plans. 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
Vanessa Hoskinson sent it in. It's about the new 50 Shades of Grey, and it says, Jamie could take home $1.5 million if he does a full frontal scene in 50 Shades Darker, an insider said. It won't be overt, more of a brief tease, and he'll have some control over how it's handled.
Sandy, this was sent in by Stephen Gardner in Manchester, who heard on the Today programme on Radio 4, less than 1% of parents with an obese or overweight child recognise it.
Let's take a look at the final score. Holly and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Hugo and Mark with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the South Wales Evening Post sent in by Stephen Thomas.
An expert in bowel movements has claimed we should all ditch the toilet seat and squat for a number two. 1.2 billion people around the world who squat have almost no incidence of diverticulosis and fewer problems with piles, said Julia Enders, who also suggested resting your feet on a small stool. Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Ripkin, Mark Steele, Holly Walsh and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Topstick, and the news was read by me, Cathy Clugston. The chair script was written by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, John Hunter and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Max Davis and Jenny LaVille. The producer was Lindsay Fenner, and it was a BBC radio comedy production. And over on BBC Radio 4 Extra, you can hear an extended version of that programme. It's